Good evening, all. This is John B. Kennedy speaking from the NBC newsroom in New York. In a short time, we'll hear reports direct from London and Berlin. France gave Germany a blank check today, signing the terms of the armistice to become effective after they have met Italy, and apparently acceded to the Italian terms. Neither the German nor the Italian terms are known. All that has so far been learned of the terms imposed upon France is that they are extremely severe. But Nazi sources say they are mild compared to the terrible terms that will be imposed on Great Britain if and when the Nazis win. About the only weapon the British will be left with is Chamberlain's umbrella. But that is if the Nazis win. And there are plenty of evidence today that they are still in a fight. The German battleship Scharnhorst was torpedoed and aerially bombed by the Royal Air Force. And fairly authoritative word came to Washington that Britain had staged a friendly kidnapping of the large and efficient French Navy. Also that the French had blown up and rendered useless two new battleships which the Germans claimed to have captured when they conquered Brest. Also the British claimed a successful attack on Berlin, advertising to Führer Hitler that he's not going to have it all his own way in the Blitzkrieg. It was the British who, you may remember, when war came to a stalemate standstill in 1916 on the Western Front, invented the tank, which the Germans made so frightful a weapon of attack. They were called tanks because they were first sent to the front disguised as water containers. Now the British, who are slow starters but very stubborn finishers, are showing an aggressive spirit in the air, meaning that they are either reckless or resolved. Perhaps underlying all the mysterious movements now going on, with Russia first sparring against Germany and then flirting with Germany, with Italy trying to humiliate the French, with whom they never really joined battle, by ordering the French armistice negotiators to consult on Italian soil, after Hitler told Mussolini to go home, with the French conniving at Britain's taking of their navy, or the largest part of it, with Romania flirting with Germany, all these developments are very puzzling. And the fact that the French are still fighting and have agreed with the Germans only to stop shooting 6 hours after Italy and France sign an armistice, all this seems to indicate that under cover of delay, a great deal of international skullduggery is going on. The French Air Force is reported as having flown to Algiers, the French African colony. And there are various dismaying rumors, one wild and woeful, that the Nazis will hold as hostage, liable to execution, the families of the personnel of the French fleet, unless the fleet is surrendered boat by boat. But this seems too frightful even for the enterprising Heinrich Himmler, head of the Gestapo. Another rumor is that the French Fourth Army is about to be rescued, fighting on the Swiss border on its way to the plains of Lombardy and Savoy, to give the Italians something to remember it by. But these are rumors. And the real news is tough enough to take, to make us careful about getting too excited over rumors, bad or good. For a rumor is more often a hope than an event. But now let's turn overseas for the news from Britain's capital.
Well, we get it back somewhere. All right, Art. This is London at 18 minutes after midnight. Fred Bates speaking. Reports have been received here from all parts of the French Empire that the feeling in French colonies is strongly in favor of continuing the war. Various governors general and commanders of French troops have indicated that they are prepared to continue to fight side by side with the British Empire. General de Gaulle, who was chief of military operations in the Renault government, broadcasting from London tonight, said, "The effective conditions would be that the French land, sea, and air forces would be completely demobilized. Arms would be surrendered and territory of France would be wholly occupied, and the French government would fall under the dependence of Germany and Italy. It must therefore be said," he went on, "that this armistice would be not only capitulation, but a submission to slavery." He added, "There are many Frenchmen who would not accept either capitulation or slavery for reasons of honor and others." He said, "I say honor because France has undertaken not to lay down her arms except in agreement with her allies, so long as those allies continue the war. Her government has not the right to surrender to the enemy. The Polish government," he went on, "the Norwegian government, the Dutch government, the Belgian government, and the Luxembourg government, although driven from their territories, thus accepted their duty." General de Gaulle said that honor and common sense demands that all free Frenchmen should continue the fight wherever they are and by whatever means they can. "It is therefore necessary to create," he said, "wherever this can be, the greatest possible French forces, everything which can be gathered together in military units." General de Gaulle said that he undertook this national task here in England. "I invite all Frenchmen of the land armies, of the naval forces, and of the air forces," he said. "I invite the engineers and the specialized workmen of the armament industry who may find themselves on British territory or who can get there to join me for this purpose. And he went on to invite the leaders, the soldiers and sailors, and the airmen of the French forces, land, sea, and air, wherever they find themselves, to get into touch with him. He added with "Long live France." Although Berlin has broadcast that the French plenipotentiaries have signed, a broadcast from France tonight does not confirm this. On the contrary, it stated that the government there are considering the making of counterproposals. There's a story here tonight that's making the trawler crews smile. In the Gulf of Aden, a British trawler spotted a periscope. She dropped depth charges. The submarine surfaced. It proved to be Italian. The submarine, in a scrap which followed, loosed everything she had, torpedoes, and let go all her guns. The trawler replied with her 1 4-inch gun and Lewis guns, killing the captain and some of the officers. The report goes on to say that the Italian submarine then surrendered and was taken into Aden by the trawler as a prize. The rest of her complement were taken prisoners. This trawler, the Moonstone, was before the war a 600-ton member of the East Coast Fishing Fleet. There is perhaps more speculation among millions in Britain about the Republican convention in Philadelphia than is realized in the United States. The issues and men decided upon in Philadelphia are considered of the greatest importance here. British correspondents cabling from America stressed the possibility of foreign issues overshadowing domestic questions in the coming election. One report, for instance, says the Republicans have generally been in favor of American assistance to the Allies to a greater or lesser degree. Therefore, he says, it has been difficult to find a foreign policy which can be taken to the country with any hope of ousting the administration, no matter who may carry the Democratic colors. This report adds that many close observers therefore feel that the Stimson-Knox bombshell and the resulting angry Republican reaction may swing the Republican platform clear across to isolationism and thus create a clear-cut issue on foreign affairs. We return you now to the National Broadcasting Company, New York.
Thank you, London. NBC's reporter in Berlin has been calling us and is ready to report from the German capital. So we turn next, over the sea again, to Berlin.
Come in, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin. The Franco-German Armistice Agreement was signed today, June 22nd, 1940, at 6:50 p.m. German summer time. The signers were for Germany General Keitel, chief of the German High Command, and for France General Hunzinger. The signing of the armistice does not mean an immediate cessation of hostilities. These will only come to an end 6 hours after the German High Command has received word from the Italian government that an armistice has also been concluded between Italy and France. No announcement will be made for the present regarding the details of the armistice agreement. Fighting, however, between Germany and France has practically ceased. The French armies in Lorraine, which have kept up a resistance long after all hope had ceased, surrendered today. Their number is estimated at about 500,000 men, including 3 French army commanders. Whatever isolated resistance is still being offered will soon be silenced. The aerial war against England is spreading. The Germans report more raids against British military objectives. And in today's communique, they speak of an attack on a German battleship by British planes, which they say was repulsed with the loss of 13 of them shot down. British bombing raids in Western and Central Germany are a nightly occurrence, and yesterday they even reached the outskirts of Berlin. Air raid warnings were given, and we could plainly hear the sound of gunfire and explosions. An American family living in the district came through the attack unscathed. On the German side, Billingham, the nitrate plant on the east coast of England near Newcastle, has again been bombed. Southampton and Bristol have been specifically named, and flying fields, searchlight stations, harbor works, and similar places have been the objective of German attack. In the mouth of the Gironde River below Bordeaux, the Germans claim to have sunk a 32,000-ton liner loaded with troops, with an estimated loss of life of 5,000 men. The appointment of Messrs. Knox and Stimson to positions in the cabinet of President Roosevelt has received considerable mention in the press here, despite the wealth of other news that comes from France. The two Republicans are considered to be anti-isolationists. The coming Republican convention is being followed with much interest. The tendency seems to be to regard the coming campaign as an internal matter for America, the more so as it is pointed out that after the French surrender, there is practically very little that America can do to intervene in European affairs. America for Americans and Europe for Europeans, the watchword given out by Adolf Hitler in his recent interview, is frequently quoted as a desirable course to be pursued on both sides. It will probably not be long now before we know the conditions which Germany has imposed on France and which France has accepted. Presumably, a certain outline of the new order in Europe will then begin to emerge from the cloud of rumor and surmise that is today the order of the day. Meanwhile, the war with England is gathering strength and may shortly be expected to enter into an active phase. The cordon of planes, speedboats, and submarines is becoming tighter all the time, and all of Germany is supremely confident of the outcome, though uncertain as to just how the great attempt to cross to England will be made. This is Theodor Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
This is Kennedy again. In Compiègne, France, today, Germans and Frenchmen stood in tribute to the dead of both nations. It's a curious commentary on twisted human emotions that enemies can stand in tribute to life when it is lost. But they cannot meet to agree on a friendly and brotherly basis that life is too valuable to sacrifice before the firing begins. But isn't it the eternal lesson of war that the victor, in the long run, suffers as much as the vanquished? Not perhaps immediate humiliation and reprisal, but the emotional and moral damage. John Stuart Mill, the great English economist, used to argue that wars were not wholly wasteful, because in time of war, the devouring of men and material was only a magnifying of the using up that went on in peace. But John Stuart Mill had never heard of a blitzkrieg. Leonardo da Vinci predicted that when man finally learned to fly, he would assume the nobility and grandeur of the angels. But Leonardo da Vinci never had a look at a dive bomber. If that is angelic, then the devil has been very much misunderstood. No, the lesson that is being swiftly learned by the American people, as reflected in the news from Washington and reverberations from the Republican Convention in Philadelphia, is this. That whatever else can be said of Führer Adolf Hitler, that he was once a paper hanger who almost contemplated hanging himself, and that he came from the Vienna slums to the mastery of Europe through naked and unashamed force, there is this tremendous truth, that he took a broken and rebellious nation, bound it together and made it so mighty that there is doubt in men's minds that even the greatest empire in the world, the British, can successfully oppose it. And all this within less than 10 years. Hitler's own speed of conquest may yet be his undoing, because his momentum is so fierce, his clockwork killing off of opposition so precise, that he has aroused the world as Napoleon stirred it. The moral of the terrible tale that is this war is that the machine has become a Frankenstein, and Frankenstein was the creature of a Teutonic inventor that killed its creator. A great empire, the French, ruined and writhing within 2 weeks. But don't let us forget that the last time the Germans wrecked France in 1871, before mechanized warfare was known, they did it in 6 months then, which is about the difference in speed between horsepower on the hoof and horsepower in the cylinder. But I think the most important news in the world today is that America is thoroughly alive to the new terms of international relations. These are simply and starkly the fact that the nation that is not ready for war will be most likely ruined by war. With all the farrago of political debate, and about that there's a new and adroit device originated by a businessman named John Saxar, the chain wire as distinct from the chain letter, which is flooding the Philadelphia Convention with laconic messages supporting Wendell Willkie. But with the heat and hustings of a presidential election year, the American people have been fortunate enough to learn in time that there is no peace on earth to men of goodwill until they are prepared to stop war at their very doorsteps by superior might. We have seen what Winston Churchill calls perverted science bring about man's ruin in Europe, largely because man has remembered in pride that he is a creature of superpower, without first recalling in humility that he is the child of a supreme power. This is John B. Kennedy speaking from the NBC newsroom in New York, bidding you all good night until the same time Monday evening.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.